Welcome to the Building Stories podcast series. My name is Amy Barnes, and I'll be your host as we explore some of Ontario's built heritage. This series will include 15 podcasts in total, so if you enjoyed today's show, be sure to check out some of the others. Each podcast is going to explore a different topic related to heritage conservation in different regions of Ontario. Each one is going to be different, because the truth is, each building has a different past, and each building has a different story to tell us. So without further ado, let's get started on today's topic. Today we head to a city that needs no introduction, since it is the largest city in all of Canada, and arguably the most well-known Canadian city worldwide. Even if I tried to introduce it, it has such a rich and diverse history that I would spend the entire podcast and still only scrape the surface. Yes, Toronto, Ontario is packed full of so many different neighborhoods. Today we are going to head to the Casaloma Wells Hills neighborhood, and we'll be exploring the property found at 7 Austin Terrace, otherwise known as the McLean House. 7 Austin Terrace has a rich history attached to it. It was built for one of Canada's most prominent publishers, John Bain McLean. Born in 1862, McLean is most associated with McLean's Magazine, Financial Post, and Chatelain Magazine. But he had so many other smaller yet extremely successful magazines throughout his time running the McLean Publishing Company. In the early 1900s, McLean enlisted one of Canada's most prominent architects, John M. Lyle, to build him a residence in what is now known as the Casaloma Wells Hills neighborhood. The beautiful Georgian Revival-style home served the family for many years until 1955. The story of the building, the architect, and the new life it has recently been given will be the topic of our conversation today. I had the pleasure of speaking with Glenn MacArthur, who is an artist, designer, curator, educator, and author whose work has been exhibited in major Ontario galleries. In 2009, he wrote, photographed, and designed a book called A Progressive Traditionalist, John M. Lyle, Architect, which was published by Coach House Books and received a Heritage Toronto Book of the Year Award. I wanted to speak with Glenn about John Lyle since he is an intricate part of the McLean House story. Glenn started our phone conversation by reading an excerpt from his book to give me a little bit more of the background story about Lyle's career.
So John M. Lyle was one of the preeminent architects of the first half of the 20th century in Canada. He was born in Ireland in 1872 and emigrated with his family to Hamilton, Ontario in 1876, where he graduated from high school and went to study architecture at Yale University and then the École des Beaux-Arts in Paris. Upon completion, he moved to New York in 1896 and worked for some of the most prestigious firms, including Howard and Caldwell and Carrar and Hastings. In 1905, Lyle moved to Toronto and practiced in the city for 40 years. He lived through the Wall Street crash and the Great Depression, two world wars, and the rise of a radical form of architectural modernism that undermined his aesthetic principles. Through economic hardships and the lifestyle changes that resulted from them, Lyle produced a significant body of work that always expressed a highly personalized and original approach to architectural form and detail. Is perhaps best known for championing an authentic regional consciousness in building design and attempting to pave the way for a uniquely Canadian architecture.
Glenn went into a little bit more detail, explaining that when John Lyle arrived in 1905, it was the year after the Great Fire swept through the downtown core of Toronto and wiped out a whole slew of buildings. Lyle saw this as an opportunity to establish himself and leave his mark on the city. His early work would include numerous banks, and it was in fact the bank work that sustained his career throughout the Depression when many people suffered economically. His work often included interior work as well. Lyle's architect firm would design the lights, the counters, furniture, and all the bits and pieces that go into a functional bank environment. Most of the banks were designed in a neoclassical revival style, but it is perhaps the Royal Alexander Theatre that Lyle is most associated with, since it is the largest and most prestigious building in his portfolio. Lyle's approach to residential design was stylistically different than what other Toronto architects were doing at the time. Glenn goes on to tell me a little bit more about this aspect and how it applies to the McLean House.
There were three main areas of concern for Lyle in his residential work. There was the plan, and the practical working side of the house, The second was the aesthetic and decorative side. And the third were the floor coverings, window hangings, and furniture. Now, the unique features of McLean House include a simple two-story rectangular structure with two rooms deep. It's an asymmetrical arrangement, which we see on both the second floor and the first floor. We have a roof line with eaves and windows cut into it. And the main feature is a projecting entrance with a panel front door and Doric column supporting an arch pediment. The building has three chimneys, one on the west side and two on the back of the house. The windows consist of six-pane sash windows in the upper floor and larger windows on the ground floor that consist of eight panes, and shutters on all of the windows on the ground floor as well, too. That was a unique feature that Lyle almost always included in his residential works. We have a one-story deck off the west side to take advantage of the evening sun, and we have a stucco exterior finish.
So Glenn was able to give us a nice background and detail about the original architect John Lyle, but the property has since been given a new lease on life. I was lucky enough to interview Matthew Garnett, who is Vice President of Development for Renaissance Fine Homes and has worked closely on this project from the beginning. Matthew bought the property in January of 2011 as part of a settlement between Toronto's Preservation Board and the previous developer. The previous developer had plans to demolish the entire site and put up a high-density row of townhomes in its place. When the Casa Loma Residents Association and the City of Toronto protested the demolition of this historically significant property, they were successful in getting a Part 4 designation under the Ontario Heritage Act. Then the building sat vacant until Matthew and Renaissance Fine Homes came to the rescue with plans to restore the place. Here's Matthew explain his vision at that time.
And I bought it in 2011 with the vision of restoring the McLean House, converting it into three attached townhomes, demolishing the wing that was built in the 30s, and erecting a single detached and two semis in its place. So it would have been a total of six units, whereas before it was 12 to 14 units. So it was much less dense. And of course, mine had the Heritage Conservation Plan and the restoration work put in place, which is now almost complete. And I received that in June of 2011, and I received site plan approval in September of 2011 and building permits in March of 2012. And I'm opening up to the public on October 17th.
Those residents that protested the initial demolition worked with Matthew all along the way. In fact, the president of the Casa Loma Residents Association, Robert Levy, felt like the plan was a win-win. Of course, he had some reservations along the way. Here's how Matthew explains it.
You know, then of course when you begin the work and people see, you know, the front facade of the building and portions of the building being retained and then the demolition happening, it's shocking, you know, it really is, to see that go on. But when they see the finished product of how it's all come together, I can tell you I got a text last night at 11 o'clock from Robert Lee just saying, you know, it looks better than what we anticipated. It's just fantastic, Matthew. You know, you did a great job.
When I spoke with Matthew, the team was just working on the finishing details. So when you hear this podcast, the properties are likely for sale, if not already sold. I asked Matthew if part of the goal was to keep those unique features from the past and integrate them into the new design. He answered with absolutely 100%. For him, it is those historic elements that set this kind of high-end real estate apart from others in a very competitive Toronto market. Here's Matthew to explain in his own words.
So to have that thing torn down in its entirety and just build new product on it, it's kind of ho-hum. It's a great location, but it's ho-hum. When you have a historic property with elements that have been reintegrated back into the actual dwellings in a 2013 modern-day era when these things were built in 1910, you know, and they were south. These things were taken from castles in France and England. Some of the railings and the gargoyles and stuff that I'm reintegrating, putting back into these houses, you don't find that. Like, you're not going to find that. I don't care if you go to Shangri-La, you go to Four Seasons, you go to any of these large, beautiful, gorgeous condos that, you know, trading at $1,300 a square foot, you still won't find that kind of history.
You can't beat the location as well. I asked Matthew if I was walking down the street and came across the building, what would I see?
You'll see that the predominant build form in Austin, like in that Wells Hills, Casa Loma neighborhood, is 1920s arts and crafts. So what you'll find that's commonplace with that architectural period is, you know, a Tudor-type facade or shiplap-type board and batten style on the front, mixed with brick and maybe a little bit of stone, right? You won't see that at 7 Austin Terrace. You'll see an 80-foot long or 80-foot wide building of stucco with, you know, 6 individual dormers that stands out on 140 feet wide lot. So you can see the width of the lot is completely different from the rest of them, which would show that it predates the rest of the development, right? The lead cover copper ornamentation on the outside of the building, right? So this isn't your shiny penny looking copper that, you know, fades to brown later. This is the shiny metallic lead cover copper, which, you know, costs a fortune. And it oxidizes that nice green color, like in the, you know, parliament buildings, right? That's what you'd see here. The other element I'd have to say is the portico. When you see the portico on the front entrance, which was the original entrance in the McLean Mansion, that portico, with its wood details and molding details, I think the other thing that sets this apart from everything else too, you know, you take a look at the shutters that are put on the home. You know, these old shutters that we had, and the windows themselves actually had to be, they had to be mechanically built to be the same, you know, old school double hung windows, right? So you've got the mechanism inside them with the pulley where the window goes up. We actually have that on these windows we had rebuilt by Ridley. And, they're wood windows. They're not, you know, PVC or vinyl. Total homage, right back to wood for these things. And I think, you know, you're going to see that with the doors really stand out. Because, you know, the doors, we've got the beautiful ornamentation with the kick plates on them. They've got the door knockers, the handles with the mail slots. You don't see that in the other homes. And I think that's where you'll see the difference right when you look at the front facade.
All of these details and care of reinstating historic features are a conscious effort. Some developers would have replaced with new modern things. But the old, that's what gives the property and the units their charm and their appeal, if you ask me. There were, of course, many parts that need to be replaced because of neglect, water damage, and general rot. But the joists and studs were wow, in Matthew's words. They were not only in excellent shape, but at a level of craftsmanship and material quality you just can't find anymore. Well, that brings us to the end of the podcast. I would like to thank Glenn MacArthur for his insight into architect John M. Lyle's work, as well as Matthew Garnett of Renaissance Fine Homes, who has given it a new layer of life so that it may be enjoyed for many years to come. If you want to learn more about the Architectural Conservancy of Ontario and its involvement with the preservation and conservation of buildings all over Ontario, the ACO is celebrating its 80th anniversary by putting together a book. This book will feature 80 buildings the organization has had a hand in saving over the last 80 years. Now, the Building Stories episode you heard today is just one that will be included, but there are many more stories to discover. You can get the book starting in November 2013 by ordering it online at their website. The Building Stories podcast series could not have been made possible without our sponsors, so a big thank you to the Architectural Conservancy of Ontario, the Heritage Resource Centre at the University of Waterloo, the Centre for Community Mapping, the Computer Systems Group at the University of Waterloo, and the Government of Ontario. If you have any comments, we would love to hear from you. You can email the Building Stories team at info@buildingstories.co or send them a tweet at Building Stories, which is BLDG_stories. And of course, you can find them on Facebook under the Building Stories Facebook page. These podcasts have been written, produced, and hosted by myself, Amy Barnes, and I'd like to take this last moment to thank you all for listening.